are back with episode 775 of the Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville.
That's right, and we are once again coming here to go over some of the TV and otherwise genre news and some of the TV shows that have been out in the last week. There were quite a few, so we should have some good discussions this time around. And while we are kind of introducing the week here, we just wanted to give a shout out to our co-host, Edmund. It is his birthday today as this episode goes out on the air.
Happy birthday, Edmund. I'd offer to get you a drink, but we're nowhere near each other right now. So you'll have to find me and I will be glad to pay for one.
That's right. All in the fullness of time with interest, I'm sure. All right. Well, as we have been doing for a little while now, since we started to introduce some of the changes to our show here, we are going to start off with basically a rundown of what has been going on in the last week. And Gary, how about you?
Oh, let's see. I got a few things. This last weekend, I'm still training for my massive Philmont Boy Scout hike, and we did our practice hike today, and we got to hike 12 miles with a full pack. And let me tell you, it's as rough as you think it is. Yes, it was quite challenging. We stopped often and went through. There were 10 of us, and we went through about four to five gallons of water just making it back and forth. So we were quite thirsty. It was a lot of fun. We were hiking something called the Florida Trail, and it runs from northeast Florida all the way down to Miami. And almost continuously, there's very few stretches where you actually have to go by road to connect, to keep the whole thing connected. So it's quite a hike if you do the whole thing, and I have no plans to do so. But it was a very beautiful thing next to what was called the Florida Canal. At one time, I found out in the 70s, they were trying to put a canal across northern Florida so that ships would not have to travel around the whole state to make it to the East Coast. So, but it was canceled due to environmental reasons. But a good chunk of the canal was built and completed, and is very beautiful. So it worked out very well for my weekend. I recently picked up a book called Girl Power by Amanda Connor. And what it is it's some of her work on Power Girl, from Watchmen, not Silver Sapphire. What was her character's name? Silk Spectre. It was her, the After Watchmen series, Silk Spectre, as well as her somewhat forgotten Action Weekly series on Supergirl. And the nice thing about this particular book was that all the comic book art pages were printed full size. For people who aren't aware, you know, when artists are actually drawing comic books, the size is significantly larger, about double of a comic book page when they actually draw it, and then it's shrunk down for comic book production. But this was actually a huge oversized book that has that they scan the actual drawn art pages without any colors or revisions. So it was really cool to actually see. You can see the Amanda's, you know, actual pencil strokes on the page where things were corrected and things like that. And it was really cool. So there were about 40 to 50 pages of that material in the book. So it's really fun. And I'm trying to think who it was done through. It was done through Graffiti Productions, which often does T-shirts and stuff. But I guess they are trying to do some more printing work. So it was it's a unique piece, and it's fun to see. And I usually manage to see Amanda at least one to two conventions a year. So I'll be bringing it to get it signed as soon as I can. I'm trying to think if there's anything other than that. We don't discuss it on the show, but we're still going through episodes of the Black Mirror series, the family is still enjoying it immensely. So they even want to see the ones that I think are too scary, and my kids are enjoying it. So I'm not sure if that means I'm a good parent or a bad parent. that's been a lot of fun, and I think that's about it for the moment.
Oh, I see. Let's see. The last week, I've been continuing to try and get my way through Navigators of Dune. I'd say at this point two-thirds of the way through, and I'm waiting for it to actually get to the point where it starts ramping up to a bit of a finish here. It does seem to be super ultra repetitive, as I've mentioned before, but even in terms of plot, it just seems to be spinning its wheels a little bit. So it's like, okay, guys, this is supposed to be the third book of a trilogy. Can we maybe get to the point now?
Well, is it like too descriptive, or is just the story just plotting on? What is...
It's plotting on, and it's descriptive in the way that Herbert and Anderson tends to be descriptive, which is saying the same general things like seven different ways. So it's not even productive description, like perhaps one would say, you know, George R. R. Martin and Game of Thrones books, where it's very descriptive, but at least it's moving somewhere most of the time. Here it just seems to be kind of caught in trying to stretch what probably was would have been 50 to 100 pages of a Frank Herbert book into 400 pages. And it's just it's kind of taking its time. So hopefully soon it will do something. Yeah, so almost done with that. And then I have a few other things in the queue, as we all do. I'll describe them when I get there. But as far as reading is concerned, that's been the most consistent thing that I've been doing. In terms of TV watching, mostly keeping up with what we have on our list. Did try to watch some of Alice Through the Looking Glass the other day.
Oh, okay.
And made it maybe a half hour.
It sounds like me with Emerald City. Yes,
yes, probably. Nice production work. Interesting visuals. I'm not really enthralled with the story, unfortunately, at this point. But that's unfortunately kind of where that's going.
I did find. Okay. I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but I did finally finish the last GFL book, The Champion, where as I made it to the last 30 pages, my character of Gary Lidros is actually listed, and I got intercepted by the Krakens and lost the game. I wasn't very happy, but at least I have not been killed off, which is often a trend for fans that the author includes in the books. So I am still alive, which is a good thing, but we did lose the championship. So, oh, well, I'll just have to live, hopefully, cross my fingers to be included in the next book. We'll have to see. But I am very remiss. The book was released almost 2 years ago, and as you said, it kept being on my right next to my bed in my stack of books, and I finally managed to get down to it after all this time. And several other fans were rather hypercritical of me for not finishing the book much earlier, since I am actually in it. So I do apologize, and I was not. While I hoped to be in it, I did not actually know that I would be. So is my only defense.
Well, there you go. There you go. I mean, we all get behind on our reading stuff sometimes, especially with other things going on. I've been much more active in terms of finally getting, I think I got past the 20-hour mark in Final Fantasy XV. I've been taking my time sometimes because of the availability of the PS4, as others are using it. I know. I got to a point in the story where actually, the structure of it makes a little bit more sense now. It's basically a lot more of a lot less freeform than I thought that it was. It does have a bit of a direction to it, which is good, and I kind of enjoy where they're going with it. It's a low key story so far, but it actually works out really well that way. There's a ton of side quests to do, and they're all kind of fun, and that's where I spend a lot of my time, because the way that I typically play Japanese RPGs of any stripe is that I like to go through and overpower myself, I guess you could say. So then I don't have to spend 5 hours trying to get past a boss fight or something. So, yeah. So I am at this point, I think I'm in the middle of chapter 3, so I'm still really early in this one. But I am doing a lot of the side quests in order to flesh out the story a little bit and power up, and also get used to the combat system, which I think I mentioned last time I was still struggling with, and I can't say I'm that much better at it yet.
Now, are the side quests really helping the storyline, or are they literally just sort of tacked on?
In many cases, it's helping to kind of get you to explore a little bit the world and get a little more familiar with what's going on around the characters. In some cases, it is really repetitious and just to kind of help you level up. So it's just to break up the monotony of going out and fighting things endlessly. So, for instance, some of it is that one of your characters, in order to help boost your say hit points or attack bonuses and so forth, your buffs and so forth, he will cook various dishes, and so you actually need to go and find the ingredients for him to use in order to cook things in order to help you power up.
Okay.
which is, you know, it's just part of the mechanic of the game. But it's kind of fun to do that and add things to his recipe list, so to speak. Other things are that one of the characters likes to take pictures. So he likes to take selfies in certain places. So some of the things are to go to these locations. So it'll be someplace that has a nice, you know, background view, for instance. But it also takes you to different places on the map that maybe in just going from A to B to C to D, you wouldn't go. So it is okay. Kind of letting you see more of the world and the artistic value of what's out there. Some of it is a little bit story-driven, so you're learning a little bit about the culture, like I said. So there's, you know, one of the things that you do is you go and you do hunting missions, which is, you know, progressively more difficult enemies to go out and fight and bring back to the person who hired you to do it. And there's a whole society of hunters, and there's one guy who basically what he does is he has you go find the dog tags of hunters that didn't make it. And things like that. So you get to go to these places and kind of finish the job for them. And in the process, you're learning about the fact that there is this whole subculture. And then there's this... Actually, it's kind of funny because it's almost like a New Jersey mobster kind of character out of nowhere who basically sends you to go do jobs that other people won't do for him. So his name is Dino, even. And so, you know, you've got some key figures around that basically send you on these quests to go be like, oh, hey, I need you to go get me this thing. Don't ask where it came from, but it's over there. That kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's not easy to kind of see the structure of it right away, but once you do get far enough into it, you see how it's put together and why. And if you're just kind of willing to let that, you know, kind of lead you, you can have a lot of fun. And it's even the matter of... you can get experience or ascension points, excuse me, which is what you can use to really add some things to your character and get, make them more powerful. Basically, it's your skill tree. And if you choose to drive around instead of just jump from point to point, you actually get in the car and drive around because it's basically four bros in a car is what you know. You actually gain ascension points. You don't if you jump. So if you just drive down the road and just kind of let them drive and just watch and look around, play a little bit, you know, you can get soundtracks from earlier Final Fantasy games and have it play on the radio in the car. And so you can just kind of just groove and like for a few minutes just watch the car drive and let it accumulate points, and then you can it's a very laid back game in that regard. You can kind of just take your time and do and look around and, you know, advance the story as you kind of desire. At least that's where it is right now. I'm not bored when I'm playing. There's more than enough to do, and yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with it.
Great. Yeah. So, now, what's been the hardest part about this? What did you say, the targeting system or the gameplay? What's the system? Yeah, what's the difference? Is it select? You have to select so many things, or what exactly? Okay. Why is it so different than other games?
Normally, in Final Fantasy, as most people who play the games would probably know, is that it was, for the longest time, it was turn-based. And then they've been struggling to figure out how to do a game like this without it being turn-based combat. And so, like, for instance, they did some things in 12 that made it a lot like an MMO. And some people didn't particularly like that. I thought that was pretty good. 13 did things that was kind of like a hybrid, and that was pretty easy to follow, and it built up over time, so you learned it. This one is very much like, I would think, like an MMO. And it's hard because it's in real time, and I just don't always get how it's selecting attacks, and it's not as active, so it feels like you're, while it's asking you to make decisions, it's also at the same time asking you to basically, you can play as the main character, and you hit one button to block and the other one to attack. And if you press down the one button to attack and just kind of let it go, it will just combo attacks for you. So it's almost like I could sit there and just hold a button down. And for the most part, I can do that a lot.
And is that in any skill level, or you're just playing at a...
Yeah, you're really just starting out that way, and at least right now, it's just... That's kind of like the main thing. So you do have to pay some attention, and certainly it can be a lot more complicated than that if you want to take a more active role, but it's also a matter of getting used to what you do, and it's taking me a little bit longer to figure out that. For whatever reason, it's just not clicking yet. In terms of, okay, you know, here's the strategy, here's this, here's how, you know, elemental magic works or anything like that. It's just not, leading me down the path as elegantly as other games have done in terms of building those skills up. It's more like it throws a lot at you at the very beginning, and then you can train at pretty much whenever you want. You can camp, and if you want to camp, you can either stay overnight and kind of level up, or you can train at the camp locations, and that's fine. Maybe that's probably something that I should do more now that I'm a little more powerful to figure out how to do it. But it's one of those things where most of these games, you are doing things so repetitively in the early stages to kind of say, okay, you've done these five skills. Now we're going to add these two. Now do that a lot. Okay, now you do this next skill and do that a lot. Here it's just kind of throwing a lot of stuff at you and just saying, okay, figure it out. Or you could probably just let your friends fight for you and just keep dodging, and then you'll get through it because they're just as powerful as you are. At least that's the way that I see it right now. There are some times where I just say, okay, I'm just going to sit here and block the entire time because it's just easier. I just want to get through it. Because it's like I accidentally like run into something and it's like, okay. It's not easy to get out of a fight, so I'm just going to let this play out. But so it does have its downside. If you're used to that kind of thing, it's fine. But I have played other games where people have said, oh, this is a great combat system. And within 10 minutes, I'm like, I can't do this. I'm not wired the way that I need to be in order to do this.
I hear you. Yeah, no, it's tricky sometimes, especially. Yeah. And then that, if it's hard to play, you don't, it's hard to get into the game. So yeah, it's
yeah. And it's not that hard. It's more just, I guess right now, maybe as it gets a little bit harder, I'll have incentive to learn more about how the combat is working. But for right now, it's like, I could play this game with really easy combat and not really be upset about it, because I'd be interested in the world and in the story. So the complication of the combat is a little bit of a downside and a distraction, but that's why maybe another reason I'm doing the side quests is because a lot of those tend to be, you know, at levels lower than where I'm at, where it says, oh, you should be level 10 and I'm level 22. So it's like, okay, this should be easy. I can do the things I like to do, whiz my way through the battle, and then, you know, move on. And I can just do that. So I'm kind of saving bigger things until later. But I am spending quite a lot of time in it. So it's not one of those games where it's like after the first hour or two, I go, nope, just not going to work. There was one game, was it even recently? I guess there was a game a few years ago called Star Ocean that everybody said, oh, you got to play this. And I go in and I played it, and it, you know, exploration was fun. It was really interesting, kind of space-based, anime-esque type of world and story and characters. I was like, oh, this is really interesting. I like this. And then the combat lesson started, and I went, oh, no. This is way too much work. No, this is not going to happen. Now, what's interesting is that there's a game that's just come out, and I'll have to wait until I'm kind of finished with the one that I'm playing now, but it's called Tales of Berseria. And this is very, very Japanese, extremely Japanese. But the last Tales game that I played, and I think a lot of them play this way, is that after a certain point, you can actually set it so that all combat is automatic. So if you decide, you know what, I really just want to run around and let the character, you know, let this thing fight for me for a little bit because I'm just not in the mood to do the combat. At least the previous game, you could do that. So I played a good chunk of that game where I was just like, I just really want the story, and I want to, you know, play around the characters and have them run around. I really don't feel like dealing with the repetitive combat right now. So I set it on automatic, and whenever I got in a fight, just kind of looked away for a couple minutes, waited for it to finish, then moved on to the parts I liked. So I kind of got spoiled by that. I think that all games should, especially these really long ones, should do something like that.
Well, you know,
just
I almost
automatic here. I'll level it up. I'll set up their weapons, and here you run it. And if it works out, great. If not, oh, I guess I got to do something different.
That, or I've seen some games that have, you know, like you said, have a story mode where you just go right across.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind that. I know that our friend Bobby Blackwolf and his show on the VOG Network, he likes to talk about Bobby Blackwolf mode, where it's basically, yeah, make it as easy as possible to get from point to point, because it's a fair point. We all, especially those of us of a certain age, we all have such limited time to even think about playing games and things like that. And if we get a weekend where we have a few extra hours to do something like that, we don't want to spend it frustrated. We'd rather just enjoy ourselves and the parts of it that we would rather do. So I'm like, I don't understand the people that play a game and it's like, oh, I worked all week, now I'm going to play a game where it is super punishing just to get past stage 3. Like, no thanks, you do that one. Let me know how it goes. I want something that's a little bit more progressive, and you know, you can figure out your skills as you go. That's one of the things, I guess, like the Assassin's Creed games, why I really liked those, is that they've got really a lot of story and a lot of detail, but also you learn the combat so progressively and smoothly that you pretty much, after an hour or two, you can do whatever you need to do. And it doesn't really continue to introduce like a ton of new things in order to complicate it. It's like, nope, here's your basic skills. You'll get slowly better at them. And otherwise, just go from mission to mission, story to story, side quest to side quest, and flesh out the story in the world for you. Mm. So, yeah, that's kind of the ideal as far as I'm concerned, because then, yeah, I can do a couple hours here or there. Oh, can't sleep tonight? Okay. Let me go do a few side missions. That's kind of what I want this game to, you know, what I want Final Fantasy 15 to turn into, if possible. We'll see. That's about it. Yeah, that's been a big chunk, like, especially the last couple days. It's just been like, okay, you know what? It's been a hell of a week in the work front. Let's go ahead and just run around this particular world for a while.
Oh, sounds like you're having fun, so yep. That's the important part.
All right, let's see here. We're actually at a really good point to have our mid-show break here in the first show of our week. So we're going to go ahead and do that, and when we come back, we've got one of our open topics to discuss, so stay tuned. And as I said, we are going to get into one of our open topics, and well, there was some exciting news that came out this week, and this is going to be an example of taking one very small piece of information and speculating the hell out of it. We have the first real hint as to what the direction of Star Wars Episode 8 may be, beyond what we know from the end of The Force Awakens, and that is the title of the film. And the title happens to be The Last Jedi. Spoilers, by the way, for anyone who somehow managed to avoid that earlier this week. Yes, so The Last Jedi. And it's the second part of the new trilogy. So, Gary, just what does that kind of bring to mind? I mean, when you saw that, did you have any initial thoughts or theories run through your head?
Well, I had two things. Well, I had a few, yes. You know, first off, they have found Luke, who is supposedly the last Jedi Knight that we know of, as Yoda himself said, after I'm dead, the last Jedi you'll be. So, you know, so if you want to take a Jedi's master's word for it, he would be the last one. And so I think it was, for me, it was the discovery of Luke and seeing this, I don't know if it's the prophecy that he's supposed to bring, you know, bring the whole, would you call it alliance? I'm starting to lose track of what government form we're currently fighting for in this universe. I'll say alliance for the, no, the New Republic. Yeah, I think that's what they called it. The New Republic, bring that back into line. And so I'm assuming it's going to be that they're going to call him back. It's funny, I was, you know, as we still are sort of living in the afterglow of Rogue One, you know, it sort of talks about how Leia was going to get Obi-Wan to help her with the rebellion that had reached that stage where they wanted his skills, you know, brought to bear against the Empire. And it reminds me of sort of this, that now they're going to find Luke to bring him back to put his skills to use against the First Order. So it's some ways I continue to see the parallels in the movies. And I find it interesting with the passing of Carrie Fisher, the fact that she had a substantial role, I'm told, in this next movie as well, makes me think that we will get the Luke and Leia music one more time pulled off of John Williams' score sheets. And so I think I'm hoping that it actually ends up being a bit more of the sort of older crew than we even saw in the first movie. While we did get a nice chunk of Han Solo in it, I really felt obviously I felt Carrie Fisher's role in The Force Awakens was very minimal, and Mark Hamill often chides, I didn't even have a single line of dialogue. All I had to do was look serious. So we didn't get I really didn't feel we got much of the old crew into it. So it'll be nice to see two members of the crew focused on a bit more, as we're told. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that's sort of what they're saying, is that, maybe Luke's taking a more prominent role in the storyline. So that's my hope. If they kill Skywalker, which I've heard bandied about, I will be extremely, very, extremely upset. So I would really like to see Luke's guidance and or drive pulled through all three movies. And that we'll have to wait and see. But I'm hoping that's not the case. Were you one of those people that immediately thought Luke's dead?
You know, I actually didn't. Okay. Although I did feel like it was going to be one that was focused a lot on Luke. Or at least his role. I feel like it's almost going to be... what's the word that I want to use for it? It's going to play a lot on that backstory of what happened with the temple and Kylo Ren and everything else, because that would make a lot of sense to me. Because, you know, we know that Luke was, quote-unquote, the last Jedi at the time of Return of the Jedi. As you said, Yoda pretty much made it very clear. But then he started the new temple. And supposedly he had students. And
yes.
Then Kylo came in with his Knights of Ren and pretty much killed them all off. So he's not just the last Jedi from before, but he's the last Jedi in the sense that he tried to get things rebooted, and he failed utterly. And I think it's going to be interesting to explore that. And I think it would be a bit of a cheat to let him off the hook too early. By killing him off in episode 8. I think you need him to be around until episode 9. Of course, at that point, I also expect him to be killed off in episode 9. I guess the there's two things out there that I've heard in terms of speculation, and it does come back to, as you said, a little bit of what was said after Carrie Fisher died, and I'm wondering how much of the story now has to change because of that. I think that they need to be a little careful because, of course, if one person on the old cast list could fall prey to a heart attack or something else, then anyone could. But at any rate, I think that they have time, if they needed to make the adjustments to, if they were going to kill off Luke in 8, they could make a switch there if they had to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, given it's not supposed to be out until... When is
December?
December of 2017. So at the end of the year. So there is still time to do edits, should, you know, if, as you said, if they need to adjust Carrie Fisher's role, or as you said, maybe perhaps if maybe Luke was going to get killed now that Carrie Fisher has passed on, they might want to still keep a member of the old cast in the ongoing films, and he might get a reprieve if that was the case. So definitely there's juggling time, whatever they have to do. And I imagine they might have to do something.
I really do think that they wanted to have, as cynical as this may be, and actually a little bit horrible to say, I really feel as though their plan was to have, of that original trilogy, so to speak, or trio, to have one each die per movie.
Oh, just stop that. That's just...
Well, no, it just kind of makes sense in terms of the character. You know, first Han goes because they were focusing on Han, and then I kind of got the sense that they were going to take somebody else out in episode 8, and then possibly have that be the, you know, have the third one go in episode 9. Because I feel like you can't just have them hanging out there in the future. I feel like they needed to give their stories an ending, but also at the same time, what are you going to do if you go into episode 10 and you have any of those characters still around? It's going to be really hard to move past them, I think, unless you give them a definitive ending. And I think that's where they kind of felt like, okay, let's give them all one big last hurrah, some really great storyline. And that's why Han had what he had in Force Awakens. I think that was definitely, you could tell looking back, that it was written in order to give him a good send-off. I'm not sure then what they were planning to do for 8 and 9, because like even you were just saying, oh, it seems like maybe they're going to focus a lot on Luke, and then maybe he'll be dead by the end of 8. But if they were planning then to have Leia kind of pass the torch as well in 9, they could switch those.
And, you know, that's actually – I'm not saying that they actually said that, because they didn't. But all I'll say is that I had heard that Carrie Fisher was supposed to have a reasonably good role in 9. So I'm sort of scratching my head, you know, now as we talk about them having to, you know, maybe change things around. They really might have to change things around, because there's, you know, obviously no way that she will be included. And they've definitely expressed – they've blatantly stated that they will not be doing a Grand Moff Tarkin on her, and they won't, you know, try to digitally edit her in or anything along those lines. So her story will pretty much have to end at 8. So and it wasn't supposed to. So we'll have to see how, you know, I keep scratching my head on how they're going to handle it. And honestly, I got a little sad when I heard, oh, she was supposed to be prominent in 9 too. I was like, you know, it was a, you know, on top of her passing, that was another blow that, you know, we would have gotten more of her character, and yes, we won't absolutely. Now. So that's a,
yeah, it's a little, I know that it's a little bit morbid to say, oh yeah, you know, they plan to write out these characters, but I feel like they really have to do something, like either have some kind of ending that wouldn't have the characters continue to come back until something happens.
Well,
they can't. That, you know.
I know they always think negative sells, but I've often said that I think positives could sell too. Could you see a heroic him standing on top of a temple with a restored Jedi Order as the closeout that the Jedis are back?
I could, but then I still ask the question, how do you then move on to 10 without him there? Because you know they're going to do 10 through 12. They already said they are. So
who knows when it's going to be? Yeah, who knows what time frame? You never know.
Well, I mean, my thought would be you're introducing these characters now in Finn and Rey and all of them. Are you going to have those continue on? You know, you don't know, and you're right. I mean, what they could do is just have that and then jump 100 years or something like that. But I think that's also a gamble that I'm not sure Disney would take. As much as they would do something like Rogue One, would they basically have 3 movies that pass the torch and then completely wipe the slate clean again?
Yeah, because killing off all the characters in a Star Wars film would be unprecedented.
Oh, stop. In a mainline one.
But, seriously, it wouldn't surprise me if they might consider jumping around at that. You know, as I see them doing these films and they're latching onto the original ones in some pretty hard ways, I wonder if, you know, they need to sort of prequel to get them back into the, you know, to sort of stay more in touch with the original core movies. Can they really go out another 3 movies and get that kind of excitement and, you know, motivation to go see it? Or is it just because these linked up to those original, you know, linked up to the original ones is why they got some of their press?
I don't know.
You go out now, another six, you know, another three movies, so you're six movies out past it and still generate the fervor that you had.
I think they're going to run it into the ground.
I don't doubt that they will, and probably maybe even go direct to video. Sorry, direct to Disney DVD or something like that, or Disney download if they haven't taken that yet. But how much can you go to the well and expect to keep delivering? To go out six movies and keep going, even for Star Wars, does seem to be a difficult task. So. We'll have to wait and see, but again, we're just trying. Let me pull the speculation back to Last Jedi and say I hope to see a lot more of the original cast in the movie. I felt, as I said, besides both Luke and Leia's almost cameo appearances, even not getting to see R2-D2 or C-3PO that much, and I guess I could say not much of a role for Chewbacca, even though he was primarily played by a different character, by a different actor, was still, I was hoping that they'd be, I want to say that they'd be more integrally involved than they were. And I realized that they were trying to introduce a new cast and not necessarily rest on the laurels of the original cast. But when you have that many of them appear and not have them have, I still have more of a effect on the story, I guess. I felt, I hope in this episode we are going to get a little bit more of it. So,
If I had to speculate, just to keep the one film in mind, I do think that the title suggests that they're going to delve, especially now that Luke is going to be part of it, a lot into what did happen.
Well, yeah, I'm assuming, besides Luke, where we'll get what I feel is we'll finally get a really good backstory of Kylo. Of Kylo Ren, because the little snippets that we got in A Force Awakens were rather unsatisfying. I think the most satisfying was perhaps the one temple scene that was shown for a short amount of time, but we never got a sense of the uprising and everything like that. And I'm hoping with the word Jedi in the title that we'll get a lot more of explanation for that.
Yeah, because I mean, it was weird because even though we had hints that there were people with the Force, we didn't have actual Jedi. So there you go.
Yeah.
Well, we know that the New Republic has been gutted big time with the Starkiller base basically ripping out the capital system that they were operating under, supposedly.
Yes.
The Resistance was kind of is now triumphant, but they did have they were small to begin with, and they're now dealing with having lost quite a bit of people and materiel and the attack on that base. So yeah, they had their little victory and everything else, but at the same time, everything is so much less stable now. And the First Order is still out there and probably in a much stronger position. So I see it as, yeah, this is going to be that kind of dark middle chapter where the characters are just trying to find some sense of balance. And in the middle of that, you get this very dark downward spiral story for Luke, where it's like, we had all this promise of the future and this is what happened. This is how it all went wrong. And, we learn about Kylo and what happened there. And I could definitely see how Leia would have a lot to do with that too, because she's got to have questions, especially if Luke just kind of disappeared, which I got the sense in The Force Awakens, but I would really like to see them play with this more, that did Luke run off with and pretty much just drop everything into Han and Leia's lap? As far as the fallout, because I got that sense that, yeah, he's out there and, we really didn't look for him because there wasn't much of a point.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's as we talk about this movie going forward, we still have Rey's parents, right, and or who left her on the planet in the first place, which might be a whole separate, could be a whole separate issue too. We also have, what was the other one that was Rey's parents? We also have the whole issue of what separated Han and Leia in the first place. They never quite alluded to, they alluded to it, but we never have any clue what it was. There's been varying fan theories, everything from Rey being their child to to the whole Kylo breakup causing it, and we don't know that what actually made that happen. So that's another dangling plotline.
I know that there were supposed to be some kind of hints to that effect in the Bloodlines book, which was kind of Leia's story before The Force Awakens.
Yes.
But from what I understand, it still didn't give a definitive answer to that question, so I don't know. Maybe it will once... That's why I say, maybe if you don't have Han around, maybe when Luke is back into the picture, him coming back is going to be the impetus for him and Leia to have a conversation that would be all about the, well, this is how you ruined everything for us, Luke. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
And to your point, you know, are we going to hear that, you know, refrain from the earlier films? I wouldn't be surprised if we do, but it's more of a twist on it where it's now a little bit more, you know, mournful and such, where it's like all of that earlier time has kind of fallen apart and all of that promise and hope, where is it now, kind of thing? Because honestly, it wasn't a great position at the beginning of The Force Awakens. Everything was kind of a lot more tenuous than anyone thought it would be, and now it's even much, much worse. So I am excited by this prospect that we will get more answers to questions, because I feel like that's what the middle chapter has to do, is give us some kind of answer.
Well, and then we also still have the Snoke mystery that we really don't know who this guy is either. So, you know, there are, you know, besides the actual Jedi issue, there's tons of new threads that they've opened that we don't have a clue of yet. So a lot of open space. Definitely things will have to be changed as a result of actors passing on, and we'll have to see what else. But I am still looking forward to it, and yeah, so...
Oh, definitely. I mean, if anything, I think I said it during our discussions for Rogue One, is that that film gave me a lot of hope that we're going to see something really different when it comes to Episode 8 that we're not used to seeing. I hope they don't try to ape Empire too much. I think that there's a lot of fear that that's what they're going to do. But I feel like they can really do a lot without doing that sort of thing. They've set up enough in the story that it doesn't have to try to ape Empire anymore. It can go its own way without and still get into that darker territory without being overly familiar. I think that's still the main criticism for The Force Awakens, is that it is really such a callback to... It's almost like a highlight reel of sorts of the original trilogy. And I know why they did it, or at least I know why I feel like they felt they had to do it that way. But it's like, okay, you did that one, that homage. Now, where does it go from here? And we'll see. What would be really ironic is if they went really, diverged really far from what was done in Force Awakens and in the original trilogy and did their own thing so much that people went back and said, I don't know, this just doesn't feel like Star Wars.
Well, that's what, when you talk about a 10, 11, and 12, that's what I think. I think it has to become. Or, you know, how many times can you retell the same story?
Well, I agree with you. It does have to go that way. And what I think, if we want to go back to that real briefly, what I think will happen is that now that they believe that the interstitial movies are going to do well and be critically received, by the fans be received with high praise, or at least with an open mind, I think they will feel like they don't have to repeat things in the mainline movies, because now they can always say, it's almost like, okay, you know what? We're going to give you a forward-looking new way of doing the mainline movies, because we can always go back to familiar ground with the interstitial ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, we know that they have plans to do a ton of stuff here. They'd love to have a new Star Wars movie out every year.
Yes.
So I don't see this going away anytime soon. And unless they do just basically blow up the galaxy at the end of 9.
Yeah, I can only imagine the next weapon.
Yes. They had a whole planet this time.
Yeah, no moon. We're up to planet, so.
Yes. Now, what was that one in those really bad Kevin J. Anderson books? The Han Solo trilogy? Was that the one? No, that wasn't the Han Solo trilogy. It was the... I can't remember. Didn't they have an entire solar system that basically was a weapon?
Yes.
That's
and actually, I think in the Thrawn books, there was actually a Starkiller, which was basically it was a cylinder. Uh-huh. It was like they didn't bother to build anything except the main gun, so there was nothing else to it except just a cylinder. Yes. Let's get it ready quicker. No, we don't need any of that other hangar decks. No, none of that. Just give me the gun.
Yes.
There won't be anything for those guys to fly through.
That's right. Still didn't work out so well. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and end our speculation of The Last Jedi right here. And what we'll do is also wrap up this particular episode. Next time, we have a couple other topics that we're going to get into, and then we might even get into the episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.